Welcome back, everybody, to the XCast X-Files Podwatch. Today, we're covering Field Trip and Biogenesis. I'm your host, Carl Sweeney, and Chris Knowles is with me again to close out the sixth season of the X-Files. How are you doing, Chris?
I'm doing very well, thank you.
All right, so what's your impression of where the series is at this point in time? I mean, when I think back to this time, it feels a little like, you know, the cultural moment of the X-Files has kind of passed. It's still a very popular series and everything, but it's maybe not at quite the height in terms of public awareness that it was just a year or two earlier. Do you think that's fair?
Well, you know, it sort of burned white hot in that fifth season. It was everywhere you looked. It was everywhere you went. It was all leading up to this anticipation of the feature film, you know, which is just basically a solid two-part mythology episode. And these things come and go. I mean, you know, to live by the zeitgeist is to die by the zeitgeist. You also had The Sopranos premiere around this time as well. And I think that sort of started to take a lot of the heat off the X-Files. But I have to say, a lot of fans were extremely unhappy about that first half of the season, you know, with all the front-loaded comedy episodes. You started to hear the term X-Files Light. I think a lot of people felt like they had signed on for one show and suddenly another show existed in its place. So I think that had a lot to do with it. I mean, and I have to say that even a lot of episodes I'm not crazy about are very well executed. It's really amazing that they basically had to start over again with a new cast and a new crew and were able to reinvent the show.
Yeah, and I think as early as the second episode, actually, I think Drive's a very good episode. I think that's the first one that really uses the new locations very well.
Phenomenal episode.
Yeah. All right, so let's get into these ones, though. We're at the other end of the season. So May 1999 is when these were first broadcast on American television. The first one is Field Trip, which is the 21st episode of the sixth season. And it has a story by Frank Spotnitz, a teleplay by Vince Gilligan and John Scheiben. And it was directed by the late, great Kim Manners. This is the episode which sees the agents investigate the discovery of skeletal remains. Now, Mulder initially believes that the brown mountain lights is a phenomenon that may be at play. Actually, a giant fungal organism is involved. I think this episode is just, I don't know, superb. It's great. I don't want to run out of superlatives, so I'll toss it over to you, Chris. What do you make of it?
Well, again, it's X-Files point of view storytelling at its best. It really takes advantage of that whole conceit. So you're perceiving these hallucinations, and the fake-outs are so well executed that at every point in time, you think, okay, now this is reality. Now this is reality. The way that all unfolds is extremely clever and extremely convincing, to the point that at the last episode, at the last scene, you're like, is this real now, or is this still the hallucination? And is the rest of the series after this the hallucination? I mean, you know,
I've heard that fan theory, you know, and I'm not really one for fan theories normally, but that one is funny. That everything that happens afterwards that people don't like, you know, Doggett and Reyes and Baby William and the second movie and whatever is didn't happen because Mulder and Scully are still in the cave or whatever. I mean, just to go back to the other end of the episode, though, I mean, I love the teaser. I love that scene in the office as well between Mulder and Scully, you know, where Mulder says, you know, I'm right 98.9% of the time or whatever it is. I don't know. You get the sense that these are two characters who are kind of increasingly aware they're in a television show construct or something. I just think it's really well played.
Yeah, it's kind of Truman Show-y.
And then that leads into the stuff, you know, the initial investigation and the stuff with the couple in the cave. So what did you think of all that stuff? So you've got this couple who, in a funny roundabout sort of way, are acting as kind of mirrors of Mulder and Scully. You know, the man teases the woman about having longer legs, which Mulder did back in Scissor G. And, you know, there's this kind of abduction narrative that they come up with. Yeah, what did you think of that whole stretch of the episode?
I think the great thing about that whole stretch that, you know, that you're referring to here is that it almost like encapsulates everything that we're seeing before. And it's almost like you're being initiated into what the X-Files is really trying to accomplish here. There's been a lot of talk, you know, the mythology is confusing, you know, blah, blah, blah. What it's actually supposed to be is that it's supposed to be disorienting. Because if you were existing in that context, in the context of, Mulder and Scully, you know, not just, you know, the conspiracy and the syndicate and things like that, but just all the crazy stuff that they saw and they dealt with. You don't think that would affect your sanity? You don't think you would be disoriented? You don't think you would start to doubt reality? This episode almost seems to be like a manifesto. And again, you know, this point that I keep trying to make about the hallucinogenic drugs, which is this through line throughout the entire series. And this is a whole body of work that most people are not going to even want to try to hack through, but it's very central.
Yeah. And even up to the new series, of course, with the infamous Babylon.
Yeah. Well, you know, Babylon's not one of my favorite episodes, but you know, there are a lot of interesting things going on here. I mean, like the fact that, you know, in the hospital room, so Einstein says, no, I just give you like vitamin B tablets or something like that.
Yeah.
So again, it's that whole, like, you know, did that really happen? Is this really happening? You know, it's like, is she lying? You know, reality is entirely subjective. Reality is entirely negotiable. It's entirely provisional in a sense. So I think that that is, you know, something that you really see play out explicitly in Field Trip, but kind of informs the episodes around it.
Mm. What I think this episode does brilliantly, amongst other things, is that it conveys the importance of, you know, Mulder and Scully's complementary strengths as investigators, you know, contrasting strengths. I think in some of like the lesser standalones, you know, what it boils down to sometimes is that Mulder's right, Scully's wrong, you know. But I think here they really examine the dynamic of that of their investigative skills together at its best.
Oh, absolutely. And one thing I just want to add as an aside, let's not forget Jim Beaver here, who Supernatural fans will be, you know, well familiar with.
The guy playing
the lab
coroner or whatever. Yeah.
Whatever the hell he is. I'm not exactly sure right now. But, you know, let me just say this about the point you just tried to make, is that Scully's science and things like that may not necessarily apply here. I mean, there's a lot of theory being written about hallucinogens that you are actually sort of phasing back and forth through different timelines and different realities and things like that. I mean, there's this whole body of work on this. It's called entheogenic theory. So, I mean, is Scully's, you know, scientific interpretation, you know, entirely correct, or is it just part of a multiplicity of interpretations that these fungi sort of usher in? And again, this is very esoteric stuff, but there's a lot of literature on this that most fans will be just completely oblivious to.
And there's this kind of like off-kilter quality to the performances too, which is really appropriate. I mean, I'm not sure if this is a ship of favorite. I think it certainly should be.
I think it's something that is developing and is leading up to, you know, Enemy and things like that. I think that the shipper element here is conscious and part of, you know, at some point they've decided, all right, now we're going to really start to push this thing forward. To me, like, you know, vampires and liberated mutants and, you know, tapeworm creatures are like infinitely more believable than Scully and Mulder, you know, not hopping into bed somewhere around, I don't know, fire. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just like in the real world, no, it just wouldn't happen. Just would absolutely never happen. I mean, those two, you know, we're talking about like two young, good looking, intelligent, go getter alpha types. They would, yeah, they'd have been in bed. And then, you know, then the series would be over. So,
yeah. All right, Chris, is there anything else on the issue of Field Trip you wanted to contribute?
No, I just think it's a real solid, brilliantly executed, very clever highlight of the sixth season. I think it's in my top three of that season by far, yeah.
Let's move on to the finale of season six, which is Biogenesis, the 22nd episode of the season, written by Chris Carter and Frank Spotnitz, directed by Rob Bowman. This is the episode in which a strange metallic artifact is discovered in the Ivory Coast. It appears to adversely affect Mulder's health when he encounters a paper rubbing of the artifact. So this is an interesting time in the series for what people think of as like the core myth arc. You know, we've had that curious kind of closure of the two fathers, one son, two-parter. So Scully talks here about how Mulder exposed their secrets, referring to the syndicate. Although it's kind of a little unclear to me exactly how exposed they got. I'm not entirely sure on that. But what it means, I suppose, is the myth arc has been shorn of some of its trappings. What do you think about this turn the mythology storyline took?
Love it. Very disappointed that it was never really expanded upon until, I guess, the ninth season. I very much get the sense that they started out wanting to do one thing and somehow it got redirected.
Do you mean within this three-parter, or do you mean further along?
Yeah, within the three-parter. I think that what we're seeing here was an attempt to create, you know, an entirely new mythology, and that these spaceship, these aliens were not actually, in fact, the same aliens as their colonizing aliens. I think that was probably redirected at some point, that this abandoned mythology to be sort of written into the the already established mythology. And I don't know exactly why that happened. I don't know who didn't want this storyline to proceed. But you know, by the time Sixth Extinction shows airs, I get the sense that, you know, this, they're establishing that this spaceship, you know, has the power to bring the dead back to life, and you know, the thing with the zombie and the fish in the bag. And to me, the very clear inference here is that Scully's fertility is restored by her exposure to this radiation. Hmm. And I think that's what the fish in the bag are meant to symbolize. You know, I love biogenesis. I think it's just very well executed, very well done, very well written, and really felt like they were taking elements from the previous mythology and reframing them, you know, repurposing them for a new mythology that would be maybe a bit more abstract, maybe a bit more theoretical. And, you know, that might be why it was abandoned. Maybe everyone sort of thought, well, people are just, you know, people understand good guys versus bad guys. They don't sort of understand these, these cosmological ruminations on the existence of man and things like that. You know, it's like, this is just not going to play. So, I mean, maybe that's what happened. I was kind of disappointed when it was just dropped like a hot potato after, because I really liked the three-parter. I mean, I'm not as crazy about Amor Fati as I once was. I mean, I used to really love Amor Fati. Another great thing about Biogenesis is that it's great to see Chuck Burks again, who I thought just was really underused. You know, he pops up a couple more times. He pops up in
Hollywood AD.
Hollywood AD and Badland. And then I think that's pretty much all she wrote for him. But I think that Bill Dow is a very appealing actor. Chuck Burks is a very interesting character that could sort of break up the monotony with the lone gunman, because it's like, you know, are the lone gunmen, like, are they experts at like everything?
Well, like you say, it's always good to see Chuck Burks, and he probably only appears, I don't know, it's probably half a dozen times or something. It's not very many appearances at all, sadly.
No, it's funny because they bring back, Smoke Man and Diana Fowley, and we don't necessarily see him on screen, but, Albert Hosteen.
Yeah, Krycek.
Krycek. It's kind of like, that's what I'm saying. It's like, let's bring these elements in, let's build a new mythology. And then people just said, well, let's not build a new mythology. And it could well be that in the seventh season, there was a lot of feeling that this was it. I mean, pretty much everyone at the time was convinced that this was going to be the last season. I mean, this is what you saw on the internet. This is what you saw in the press. The staff at the time, said that this was going to be it for them. I just think that, you really got something exciting and something maybe a little bit too deep and layered for network television. I don't know. It's like one of those albums where or a band or a singer takes his old songs and sort of rewrites them and rearranges them and re-records them. That's kind of like what Biogenesis feels to me. It's like, let's take all these elements, Krycek, blah, 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 and create something new out of it.
Yeah, because I suppose last year we had Gibson Praise was the key to the X-Files and everything within, and this Yeah, we've got an artifact that's filling a similar function, and Carter returns to the Navajo. It's interesting, actually, after all the criticism he got for the Blessing Way sequences, there's another healing ceremony here, but you don't see as much of it.
Yeah, and it's a lot more, you know, genuine. You know, it's not as obviously early 90s television as no. The Blessing Way is. I think it's a bit more authentic.
Yeah, obviously in Anasazi, Mulder had been under the influence of something in the water. This water had been poisoned and he goes paranoid. Here he comes into contact with this artifact and he sort of goes insane. He gets locked up as a result.
Yeah, because, I mean, look at it this way. I mean, really, okay, so Colony and Endgame and, you know, arguably Duane Barry and Ascension and in One Breath, you know, they lay down the marker for the mythology. But the mythology doesn't really kick. The mythology, as we came to know it, doesn't really kick in until Anasazi, Blessing Way, Paperclip. So that's what I'm saying. It almost feels like, let's go back to that point. Let's go back to Anasazi. But here's another thing. Now, I'm talking about this whole idea of hallucinogens. Dr. Sandoz, do you understand the implication of that name?
No. Go on, please inform me.
Sandoz Pharmaceuticals invented LSD.
Okay.
So, you know, so he's got like Sandoz's tablet. I mean, you know.
I see.
There's the obvious, you know, the very subtle inference, you know, that Mulder is really having, like, what he's having is like an extremely bad trip, you know, because of Dr. Sandoz and that whole connotation. and, you know, and the whole thing with the Navajo, I mean, like the peyote ritual, you know, it's hallucinogens again. So it's like, you got Biogenesis falling on field trip where you have an explicit reference to hallucinogens and mushrooms and things like that. And then the next episode, it's symbolic and, you know, science fictionized. Mm. And this is something that you see throughout the series, starting with Red Museum and Excelsis Dei. You know, it's the order is flipped, but again, this is something that a lot of people don't necessarily even care about when watching The X-Files, but everything that's going on is, you know, people have said, oh, they're just making it up as they go along, and it's just like half-assed, you know, willy-nilly, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, that's not what's going on. This is all very tightly orchestrated. This is all very tightly sequenced, very tightly written. You just don't understand the subtext, because The X-Files isn't actually about the text. It's about the subtext. This is not speculation. This is not just some crazy idea I have. I mean, this is the way they think, what they've said, you know, the way they've explained it. I mean, Kim Manners has said, you know, you can't be a dummy and watch this show. You have to really figure things out, because everything is about the subtext. And if you understand the mythological history, the ancient mysteries, you know, real life government conspiracies, hallucinogens, if you understand all the things that they're throwing up in the air here and juggling and fitting together, then absolutely nothing you watch will seem arbitrary or, you know, provisional. It all seems like it's all part of an unfolding meta narrative.
That's an interesting quote from Manners, though. You can't be a dummy and watch a series. Because what I was thinking actually was to go back to the comparison to the Anasazi trilogy. The other thing is that in the Anasazi trilogy, you've got the digital tape, which functions as what sort of Alfred Hitchcock would call a MacGuffin, which is an object that everybody wants. You know, the reasons that people want it is kind of secondary. What's most important is that people want this object. And here we've got the artifact. And one of the reasons I think this is the strongest season finale for at least a couple of years, maybe, is I find that artifact much more convincing as a MacGuffin than somebody like Gibson Praise, for example. But I mean, what I'm saying is you could turn on the episode after 10 minutes, miss all the stuff at the start, and you'd very quickly pick up that, all right, there's this artifact and everybody wants it, you know, and you could just kind of key into that aspect of the episode. So it functions in multiple different ways. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I mean, if it doesn't function as a, you know, on its own as a solid, entertaining plot and narrative, then what's the point? Because every, you know, you can put all this other stuff in it, but, you know, if the story doesn't work, the story doesn't work. I mean, that's all there is to it.
Yeah. This is an interesting trilogy from that respect, actually, because you've got some moments which kind of fans would kill to see, like the death of Diana Fowley, for example, and it takes place off screen. You know, I find it really interesting, actually, what's shown and what's not shown in this trilogy. One thing I'd say about this episode is I watched this again wearing headphones, and it's a good way to watch it because the sound design on like Mulder's headaches is phenomenal. They did a really good job conveying his disorientation. There's some gorgeous shots in the episode too. There's one that it's when Scully's looking for the doctor in the corridor, and it's a really unusual shot which kind of focuses on her, and her face gets closer to the camera, and it's really striking. I don't know, I mean, they don't normally frame shots like that. And then, of course, the great final image of the ship on the beach.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, I think that's awesome, too.
To me, that is the greatest final scene of the entire series. Because what we're seeing here is that Scully finally gets what she's looking for. This is through line throughout, you know, the stories that, you know, Scully's like, okay, well, maybe you're right, maybe this is half blah, blah, blah. But it's like, I need something that I can see, something I can hold, something that I can touch, something that's tangible, something that I can measure and weigh and analyze, photograph and record and blah, 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 blah. And there it is. So everything that Scully has been looking for throughout the past 6 years, she's standing right in front of.
Is there anything on Biogenesis you wanted to chip in, Chris, before we wrap up?
Yeah, I mean, great season finale. And to me, like a return to form, because you saw like, you know, like Titanus and SR-818 and things like that. You know, you sort of got this sense of like the old series trying to burst through this, you know, X-Files-like concept. But to me, it's like Biogenesis is like bang on. Okay, this is the X-Files again. I can rest easy. You know, my show is back.
Yeah, well, and Field Trip's brilliant too, obviously, just before it as well. So, I think it's a strong couple of episodes to end the sixth season. Well, somebody else will be here tomorrow to talk about the episodes that kick off the seventh season, and they're The Sixth Extinction and The Sixth Extinction 2, Amafati. Well, cheers, Chris. As ever, highly interesting, very illuminating. It's always good to hear what you got to say.
Thank you very much.
Listeners, find us on Twitter at @X_cast. Find us on Facebook. Type in XCast. You should find X-Files Basement, the XCast podcast fan group, or you should find our page as well. Until next time, trust no one.